Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Hope everyone is enjoying their Memorial Day long weekend. I'm sure everyone knows that this is a holiday and whatnot, but also remember what this holiday means, especially to veterans and their families. And always remember the sacrifice that the veterans have given in order for us to have this day. So, with that being said, let's get on with the show. I see my co-host, Jabron, is in the queue. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, my man?
Doing good, JK.
That's glad to hear, my man. How have you... Labor Day festivities been thus far?
It's been cool. Haven't done too much, but, you know, it's been cool. A nice, good weekend.
Yeah, a lot of action this weekend and whatnot. Did you get a chance to catch any of the action?
I did catch some of the CBS Sports fight.
I couldn't hear you. Hello?
Hello, I got you.
Scully.
Oh, okay, I hear you now.
Let's get right to it and introduce Mr. John Scully to the show. John is always welcome to have you on the show. One of the guys that has been with me through thick and thin through all the years. So, hey, Scully, appreciate on this Labor Day weekend. My man, how are you doing this weekend?
Everything's very good. Very good.
Had a little action up your way, John. Did you get a chance to catch any of the action up there, or did you know any of the guys that were involved possibly?
Exactly. Hello?
Scott? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Lost
okay, yeah, I thought I got cut off. So which thing were you referring to?
I said, did you get a chance to watch any reaction this weekend, especially some of that up around your neck of the woods? Not sure what's going on with Scully. He seems to be going in and out here. Maybe I should call him.
You know what I do? I'm gonna call you back on my house phone.
Okay. All right.
I'll call you right now.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes we this is Blog Talk Radio. We do know we have some problems sometimes. But Jabron, what were you saying?
Yeah, I caught a couple of the undercards on the CBS Sports, and I caught the main event with Sugar Shane, and I got to hear a lot of good commentating for my guest from last week, Kevin Kelly. and then I just went back and I found some footage that I didn't know that was there. I watched Sugar Shane spar with Triple G. From a couple years ago. I sat down and critiqued that.
Okay.
Have you had the chance to take a look at that, or did you know about that footage?
I had seen the footage sometime before. I kind of have some mixed emotions about that. I believe it was maybe 2 years ago that I really talked about Sugar Shane retiring, along with him and Zab Judah, not necessarily because of an erosion of skills, which I also contributed to, but I'm also thinking of some of the young and upcoming guns that we have, even if they're just prospects right now, and that we need to hold on. Scully's called me instead of the show.
Hello?
Oh, sorry for that. Sorry for the dead air. I was just trying to get Scully. He called me instead of the show. But what were your impressions of that? Let's remember it was sparring. So what were your impressions of Sugar Shane sparring with Triple G?
The thing that stood out to me the most was that I was thinking about Triple G's fight. I was watching it more for Triple G than anything about Shane. And what I took away from is that when you watch Triple G fight, very, very seldom do you see anybody get in the trenches with him, like clinch with him, make it a rugged fight. And that's what Shane was doing. In the beginning, it was like Triple G was just the aggressor, walking Shane down, and it got to a point where Shane was just like, I'm not going to let this guy keep walking me down, and he stood his ground and was more physical with Triple G, in the clinches, going to the body, getting him on the ropes where he just can't just dictate the fight, dictate the sparring session, and I'm like, I don't see no fighters getting close to Triple G like that. Like, he keeps his distance. He don't waste his punches. But I don't see anybody taking any chances of getting on the inside with him. And it was like once a lot of that tussling and wrestling started going on, I noticed that Triple G, had to exert a lot more energy. So he was a little more winded after the round of all that tussling and the physicality of it than when you watch him fight. I can't even remember if I ever seen him clinch. Like, I mean, someone clinch with him or get real close.
Well, Willie Monroe tried it a couple of times, but the thing about it is that, we can't find anybody that's willing to take that punishment walking into Triple G or going into Triple G and trying to exert that physicality. Scully, have you watched this tape that Javon's referring to, Shane Mosley sparring with Triple G? And do you agree
I didn't know that they even sparred, to be honest with you. This is my first time hearing about it.
Javon, maybe you can give us send us a link, and we'll put that video up either on our website or on our Facebook page.
All right, no problem.
But Scully, while we're talking about it, do you think that is the way to possibly handle Triple G? To get more physical with him and to rough him up on the inside.
Well, I would say this, the sparring is so much different. There's so many differences. I've actually had many, many discussions with fighters. And in my book that I've told you about many times, I'm actually writing a whole segment on this exact subject. You see guys like maybe they bully a certain guy in the gym, but they could never do it in a fight for different reasons. A lot of times, say he comes in and say Shane, I didn't see the tape, but I'm just giving an example. Say a guy is aggressive and on the way in, he catches a shot. He gets hit with a shot, but he keeps coming and he gets real physical. Now, you think nothing of it. You say, oh, wow, he was real aggressive. In a real fight, you take the headgear off,
you take this, put the small gloves on, you put the situation in hand, that one shot that you didn't even notice because he walked right through it, in a real fight, he might not walk through it. He may get hit and he'll feel a pain that's in his eye that's going to hold him back. That wouldn't happen in sparring. So there's so many differences. So it's hard, and it took me a lot of years to really realize this, but, you know, there's many, 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 many differences between the sparring and the real fight. So I wish I had a dollar for every time I've seen some guy get over on someone in the gym, and then a couple months later they fight each other, and the guy who was on the losing end in the gym ends up, like, wiping this guy out in a real fight. So there's a reason why people are successful in the gym against certain styles that, like I'll give an example. I've always thought of this. You know, when I first turned pro, Roy Jones was, you know, he was the guy. Like, when we were coming out of the amateurs, he was the guy. And every guy in my weight, in or around my weight, middleweight, super middleweight, junior middleweight, we could have fought each other as pros. And I used to think of scenarios, you know, how could I beat this guy? What could I do to beat this guy? And every time I came to Roy, I'm always like, man, you know, sparring. I did well with him in sparring, but it's like in a real fight, small gloves, I don't think my eyes, you know, would stand up to it. You know, I'd end up getting cut, you know, because he's such a sharp puncher. That I don't think, you know, in a real fight, I could have, my eyes would have withstood his punches like they did in the gym, because I had a certain level of protection with the headgear. So so you know, I'm very leery of going by sparring and how guys do in sparring. It's an indicator, but it's definitely not foolproof. I wouldn't bet off of it.
Well, we're also being joined by the champ, so it's another segment of Chilling with the Champ. Now, Layman, we were talking about Triple G, and DeBron was saying he saw a tape of Triple G and
your
Shane
recording
Mosley
has reached the
talking.
Maximum length. To replay your message,
I
press 1. To
champ,
delete
yeah.
and re-record your message, press...
Well, I guess we don't have a champ. Let's see. We'll try to get him back on. But DeBron, was there anything else that you wanted to add to that? I mean, did you was headgear involved in this? I mean,
yeah, headgear was involved. What Scully said was right on. I'm not taking anything away saying, oh, you know, somebody can just go in there and bully Triple G or anything of that sort. It was just that I was just critiquing and observing from watching his fights and seeing how his fights go and then watching the sparring session. I know it's different, but I'm saying, like, maybe
right.
a fight could be different if someone was in the clinches with him and being more physical with him. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like it could present. The thing is like, I feel like no fighters, and it might be a reason because of his power, presents anything to make Triple G have to use any extra energy, exert himself. It's like he's just walking around in there comfortable. Nobody makes him, like, uncomfortable. Make him work. Make him move around. Make him think.
I mean, I agree with you 100%, and as a trainer, that would be my thing. That's why you have the training camp. You go over the weaknesses or the perceived, you know, best course of action. But, you know, like I say, I'll say this, and I honestly can't remember who it was, but the other day, literally within the last 3 days, there was someone online talking about they sparred with him. It might have been Derek Finley. Whoever it was, they sparred with Triple G. Relatively recently, and they said, I forget their exact words, but they said his power was supernatural. They said it was just ridiculous. Like they just said it's just nothing but pain. Like you box this guy, it's nothing but pain. So, you know, like one punch, even if it doesn't look like much, one punch, you know, you may go in with a certain mindset, and I'm going to back this guy up, and I'm going to be physical, but, you know, he hits you with a shot that that other people hit you with, and you walk through it, and he hits you with it, and it just feels supernatural. You know, they like Jason always said, you know, everybody, it's funny, but it's true. Like, everybody has a plan until they get hit, and oftentimes when you get that certain power, you could have trained for 8 weeks to have a game plan, and the game plan goes right out the window once you feel that extra power that you're unaccustomed to. I wish I could remember who it was. I think it was Derek Finley, but he was whoever it was. They were saying that his power is just super abnormal, just really, really different. And it's exciting for the middleweight division. Just with him and Canelo and whoever he may meet up with, Cotto, I think it's a good time.
Now, let's kind of stay with that Shane Mosley fight. Were you able to watch that, John?
I saw parts of it. I actually hosted a wedding in my backyard yesterday, so we were all out in the backyard for most of the day and night. But I was able to check it, and I thought Shane, all things considered, I thought he fought a pretty good fight, pretty good. But the other kid, I think, was just obviously a little fresher and got the job done. I believe Shane is 44. 44 is 44. You know, after having that many tough fights, over the course, Shane's been a pro. I mean, he was in the 92 Olympics. You know what I mean? So we're talking 24 years as a pro. Which is that's right up there with Ray Robinson, that level of pro.
Yeah, and Scully, I mean, I don't know if the right word is problem, but considering that the level that this young man is at right now. And we all know that Shane is a Hall of Famer, and like you spoke of how long his career has been. Do you think, that perhaps, we have seen the last of Sugar Shane, or do you think that as always, he thinks he has that one more fight left in him?
I would assume that he'll think he has one more fight left in him, because he was very competitive, and he's still physically, like I said, I did the show with him last year, and he was training, and he's still physically in great shape. He looks great. He looks very trim, and when you get at that level, now you're talking about Keith Thurman and these type of guys, with that kind of power, and I think that he chose the kid he fought last night by design. You know what I mean? It was a fight where he felt like he could win. And, there was a reason why they didn't mention the other names. But if you keep going, outside of a rematch, which the kid probably wouldn't even want to give him one because he feels like he got away with a win and there's no reason to give Shane another chance at it. If you stay too long, I mean, these guys are rough. I mean, Keith Thurman is rough. All of those guys at that, Sean Porter's a handful. So it's the handwriting might be on the wall in terms of if he keeps going and he matches up with these guys, I can't see him turning back the clock and being what he was 10 years ago.
Now, Jabron, I'm not sure whether it was put down on pen and paper or not, but rumor has it that if Sugar Shane had won this fight, or the winner of this fight was supposed to meet the winner of Sean Porter, Keith Thurman. Jabron, do you see either one of these guys, Shane or the young man that beat him, do you see either one of them giving either one, Sean Porter or Keith Thurman, a run for their money?
No, I don't see either one of them giving Sean Porter or Keith Thurman any problems. And Shane stated that if he did win the fight and Sean Porter won the fight, that he would vacate the belt because it's too close of a friend with Sean Porter to fight him.
Yeah. John, you know, when does that become a problem? I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, we didn't hear so much of this, you know, he's my friend, you know, and we'll never fight, we'll never make it. John, I don't recall hearing a lot of that back in the days when you and Ronnie Shields and, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, I don't recall hearing things like that. I mean, is this something new and is it good for boxing?
Well, I'll tell you this much. If you remember, one of the best fights, I'm talking competitive, evenly matched and just desire and a dramatic ending. One of the best fights I've ever seen was Simon Brown beating Maurice Blocker by knockout. I believe it was in the 10th round. Those two were best friends. They lived near each other. They ate dinner at each other's houses. They went on vacations with each other. They were literally best friends. And they fought each other for the welterweight championship of the world. They were unifying the title. If you remember, it was a great fight, like a tremendous fight. So they literally did not hold back. But I will now. I have two other friends who fought each other, and they were friends. And I won't mention their names. They're very good friends of mine. But if you know boxing, if you really know it, you'll probably figure it out. But years ago, they fought each other on a pay-per-view show, and it was like very obvious after a couple rounds that they really didn't want to hurt each other, and they didn't hurt each other, and the fight ended up being a draw. They went, no one ever called for a rematch because it was just their friends. They just couldn't put their friendship aside. A lots of guys have fought each other. They fought friends, and like I say, a lot of times it ends up being very good fights. Like I say, Simon Brown and Maurice Blocker is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Let me ask you the same thing, Jabron, because you're closer to this generation than either one of us. Do you think that waters down the competition when you have friends that won't fight friends?
Yeah, I mean, they say that now, but it depends on the level of the fight. If we're talking prize fighting and you're talking, you know, eight, nine, ten-digit purses and stuff, you know, the money is going to talk. But on a lower level, I think it could hurt the sport because, I mean, you do have a lot of friends that end up either they go in the amateurs or Golden Gloves together or stuff like that, or they meet someone and become friends in Golden Gloves and amateurs and stuff. So when they get older like that, I mean, that really could, because the way things are now, a lot of fighters are making more money. So it'll be like they won't take the risk of their friendship or wanting to hurt their friend into accountability.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how that goes. Like I said, as Scully said, you have those situations, but then again, you know, I kind of have to agree with you, Jabron. You know, if the money's right, you know, at some point, it's very unlikely that we can't put friendship aside. Now, the WBC has kind of ruled on Deontay Wilder, and they're more or less saying that he can fight anyone that he wants. One of the names that comes up is Chris Mariola, because this is a very short list. You know, now, Scully, I have to ask you, if Chris Mariola is on the short list to face Mariola, is this an indictment against the heavyweight division, knowing knowing Chris's record and he's still being considered as a title contender, or is this just kind of a publicity stunt to get Chris's name back out there?
Well, I'll say this much. I think it's a terrible reflection on, but it's an indication that the sanctioning bodies, and I've said this many times, the sanctioning bodies have lost control. Because here's what it is. The champion is supposed to fight the number one contender. If the number one contender is available, unavailable, then the number two guy, the number three guy, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The WBC has a top 10. So they can't say there's no one to fight because there's 10 guys waiting for them to get the phone call. But the fact is that somebody's got to promote it. So the WBC, on the one hand, they have to enforce their own rules. But on the other hand, they can't do that if nobody will promote the fight. So I don't have the ratings right here in front of me, but if you guys have a computer, you can go to fightnews.com and look up all the rankings, and you can find out who's next in line, because by the WBC's own bylaws, they have their list of the top 10. If I was ranked number 4 in the world right now by the WBC, I'd be saying, hey, what about me? Like, you must have my number. You must know my address. I mean, get a hold of me. So I don't know why they're not calling. So somebody's promoter is not doing their job, that's for sure. Somebody's manager is doing a terrible job. Whoever's ranked number 5th by the WBC right now should be bouncing off the walls, going crazy, wondering why he's not being answering the phone.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at that list that you're talking about right now. Of course, Tyson Fury's number 1 and Klitschko's number 2. So those two are taken care of. Povetkin, we all know the story there. He's number 3. Deontay is number 4. But then you have Luis Ortiz at number 5.
Well, I mean in the WBC
Belair
ranking.
Number 6. Stiverne at number 7.
I'm talking about the actual rankings of that sanctioning body. Deontay's the champion.
Oh, okay.
So who's underneath him? Who's number 1 right underneath him? WBC.
Oh, okay.
You must be looking at like Fight News rankings or something.
Alexander Povetkin is the number 1 and Stiverne is number 2.
Then I mean, like it or not, Stiverne is next. Povetkin is having some difficulty issues. So under the rules, Stiverne must be next. And if he gets sick, then whoever's number 3 is next. And that's the way it should be, but it's literally, like, I don't think it's ever been that way. Like, it's almost like a comedy show when a sanctioning body, every once in a while, they'll come out with this statement where we're going to go by our rules and we're going to do this, and that, and the other thing. And it's like, man, you guys haven't been going by your rules since 1830. I mean, like, this, we all know who's next in line because we can all read your own rankings. But they very rarely do that other than the number 1 mandatory that they try to push sometimes. So, like I say, whenever they say that there's nobody to fight, it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody famous or undefeated, but whoever they put as the next guy, that's who's supposed to fight.
Yeah, I mean, we all know how the rankings are supposed to go, but John, now, like you said, Stiverne is actually would be the next opponent, but once again, it goes back to money, and I'm not sure, money-wise and draw-wise, I'm not sure whether, Stiverne is really that much better of an opponent or drawing card than Chris Yeriola would be. It would be, depending on where the fight was held. But has Vermaine Stiverne kind of seemingly worked his way out of the division as far as being a viable opponent? Because it seems like since he lost to Ortiz, we haven't heard of Stiverne.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's such a – the boxing game right now is so crazy. I mean, they don't even fight. You know, it used to be where guys would have non-title – you know, like a contender would keep busy. They would – a manager would keep his contender busy. You know, I can remember when Marlon Starling lost to Donald Curry for the title in 84, February of 84. And right away, he was right back in the ring, and he fought, you know, over the next year and a half or so, he fought Floyd Mayweather Sr., he fought, whoever it was, Pedro Vieira. You know, they keep busy with solid 10-round and 12-round fights, keep them busy. Now, these guys won't even fight unless it's a HBO championship card. Like, nobody's really interested in refining their skills and keeping themselves busy. It's like, once they reach a certain level, it's like, all right, I'm not fighting unless you're paying me big money and there's a title on the line. Otherwise, I'm not going to fight. You know, money is their primary goal, as opposed to, I believe, back in the day, guys, you know, money's always been a factor, but, you know, they wanted to perfect their craft and they wanted to learn how to fight and they certainly wanted to keep busy and keep sharp. And I don't think any of these guys really think that way. The last guy I really remember that approached his career like that was James Toney. And other than James, I've never seen anyone do that. That's why James has over 70 fights, because he had so many non-title fights against solid opposition. He kept himself busy. And these guys don't even do that. So you don't even hear their name until, you know, a title fight comes up. And then they're, you know, I didn't even think Stavern was fighting anymore, to be honest with you, and until you just mentioned his name.
Hey, I mean, you know, it came up in Ring Magazine, and I was, you know, dumbfounded because, I mean, you know, usually he comes out here to San Diego to train, and I hadn't heard anything from him or Henry Ramirez or anything since his last suspension for marijuana. But, Jabron, your thoughts on Bermain Stivern and whether or not he's still a viable candidate as far as putting butts in seats for a pay-per-view, or, you know, has he just become kind of a fixture in the heavyweight division?
I think he's just like a stepping stone, somebody who's moving up in the ranks to fight him to get rounds in, but I don't think he's a major attraction for a pay-per-view card.
Yeah, I mean, you know, unless this fight is held in Alabama or possibly in Canada, I don't really see that this is a real, real drawing card or something that is going to really get boxing fans. You know, I mean, it's not a fight that we're craving for. If, you know, they put it on TV, we're going to watch it. John, you know, there's we still hear all the criticism about the infighting between the different promoting companies and whatnot. You know, this week it's, you know, Showtime or one of them is suing Top Rank for legal fees, all kinds of different things. But John, while all this is going on, the PBC just slowly keeps putting its shows on and just kind of putting one foot in front of the other and kind of just moving on. John, this week we're going to see fights from Hollywood, Florida. They're going to be on PBC and Spike. John, you know, is there still a controversy about PBC? I mean, you know, they're giving all these young fighters, I think, these opportunities. I mean, you got Dia Davis, you got Gervonta Davis, Caleb Plant, all of these young and upcoming fighters, and then you have a title fight between Rancis Bartholomew and Mickey Bay. John, I mean, to me, all of these things are doing more to promote boxing and keep boxing in the forefront. Do you agree, or is PBC, you know, the demon that all of the pundits are trying to make it out to be?
No, PBC is the best addition to boxing in a long time. I'm actually heading back up to Montreal this week to go be with Better Bias. He's fighting on a PBC show. So, I mean, I've been to numerous PBC shows over the last couple of years, and they put on great shows, great events. They give the young up-and-comers big opportunities, and they put them in tough fights. They don't, you know, it's not like you go and you watch the local or, you know, the young up-and-comer just blast out some guy that's not very good. I mean, they put these guys in tough. I've actually seen a couple hot prospects get beaten on their shows. You know, they do things in a manner that I like. And, I think they've been a great addition to the professional boxing game.
Now, Jabron, you know, that was one of the knocks on PBC was the fact that, you know, we were getting all these prospects and the fights weren't going to be any good. And, you know, I mean, there was a whole litany of excuses that everyone was making to knock this PBC program. But as Scully has just pointed out, man, you know, some of these have been very close fights. Some have been some very good fights. Your thoughts on criticism toward PBC? And, you know, is it time to give credit where it's due?
Yeah, I think credit to be given about the PBC. I saw last week that it seems that they pulled back on they came to agreement with the lawsuit that Arum and had with Al Haymon, but they said they won't present any information to the public or anything like that. It was pretty much like confidential behind closed doors as far as the agreement that they came to. So maybe we could be seeing some HBO fighters fighting Showtime fighters and Haymon and Arum. So we can keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. But it's definitely a great thing to give these up-and-coming fighters opportunities, especially when you got a lot of these, like you brought up earlier, these older fighters that's trying to hold on to the game and take some of these spots that these younger fighters could be getting experience or getting opportunity to get a belt. So it's a wonderful thing.
John, I got to, you know, ask you a little bit here because the fight that I believe you're talking about is going to be PBC on ESPN, and that's going to be against Madonera, I believe.
Right. Yeah, it's up in Montreal on the 4th.
Yeah, you know, without giving away a whole lot here, you know, we've seen a couple other light heavyweights, but John, you seem to be especially high on this young man, and you were telling us a little bit about him and his power. John, would you kind of, you know, like tell us a little bit more? I know you can't give away the game plan or anything, but can you kind of get us a little bit more acquainted with this young man?
Well, like I said, I mean, he was an extremely decorated amateur. He had 300 and something amateurs. He was a world amateur champion. He just... you know, he's 9-0, 9 knockouts. He's knocked out 2 former world champions, you know, convincingly. He's just exciting. He's just what I would classify as a breath of fresh air. Like he wants to fight. He wants to fight Kovalev now. Like I've spoken to him about it, and he has that Eastern Bloc mentality. Like he says to me, he said, why wait? You know, I want to do it now. Like I can do it now. I have enough experience. I have power. I have skills and I'm ready. I don't need to wait. You know, why wait? Why build myself up for 20 fights? If I'm ready, I'm ready. And, he would take a fight with Kovalev tomorrow if they offered it to him. Like he's just, you know, it's just crazy. Like, he's just, he'll fight anybody. He just, like I say, I had a sparring partner up there in the gym with him and the guy was a good fighter. A lot of fights and it just amused me because every day this guy just kept telling me, I can't wait to go home. Like I just can't wait to get out of here. Like I got to spar with this guy every day. This guy hits like a ton of bricks. Like he just hits so hard And he goes, anywhere he hits you on the arm, he hits you on the side, he hits you on the ribs, just wherever he hits you, it just hurts. And, you know, so that's just the kind of power he has with the big gloves and the headgear. I think people, once they see him on a bigger scale, I think they're really going to be like him. I think he's what boxing needs. You know, just the type of guy. He's no nonsense. He just comes to fight. You know, when he's like, it's funny because when he spars, there's no like playing around or, you know, he doesn't have that kind of mentality. He has that fight mentality, and he likes it. Like, he likes when people fight back. You know, he's one of these guys, you go to spar with him, and it's like the worst thing you could do is fight back, you know, as opposed to trying to box and survive and get out of the way, because he loves when these guys come to him, and they generally don't. They generally try to get out of his way. So I just, you know, I'm high on him. I'd like to see him more. I'd like to see him in longer fights and see how he reacts to the 8th, 9th, 10th round. You know, like Ali said with Foreman, you know, we got to see when the guy says round 9, round 10, round 12. But so far he's a handful, man. And I think people are really going to like him.
Now being on Monch, out of Montreal, John, is he going to be on? Is he going to be on the TV portion of this card or not?
Oh yeah, no, he's one of the main fights. Yeah, no, he's right there, prominent on the poster. He's this show is built in part around him. Like, this is to highlight him.
So he's fighting his first 12 rounder, or has he been in 12 rounds before?
I don't know what they've been scheduled for. I know he's been going, getting them out of there pretty quick. But this fight is more of a showcase for him.
You talked about Benavidev, right?
According to Ring Magazine, he's featured on this fight. Yeah.
Yeah. According to this, he's a 12-round light heavyweight. So, is this his first 12 rounder or not?
Yes. First 12. Yeah. Like I say, he's only had 9 fights. He's moving at an incredible pace by design. Like, you know, I'll give an example how if you know this guy, you'll understand. In his second fight, now nobody would do this. In his second fight, and if you could look it up, I forget the guy's name, but in his second fight, he fought the guy, really tough journeyman, with like 45 fights. I can't remember his name for the life of me. But in his second pro fight, they offered him this guy, and he took the fight no problem.
His name is Sanders.
Right, what's his name? Rayco.
Yeah.
They call him like
Rayco
Man
Sanders.
Of War or something. Now, you know, I always tell people, like, if you're a manager and you have a guy 1-0 and you put him in with Rayco, you're a fool. Like, you're going to get fired. But with this guy, they're like, oh, yeah, no, Rayco, yeah, that's no problem. Like, it was like they wanted to fight. And I'm sure Rayco must have been like, man, this kid's got one fight. Like, what are these people, crazy? And obviously they weren't. Like, he went in there and, you know, and then the same thing. I think he was 6-0 when he fought Tavoris. Now, I don't care what point at Tavoris' career is at. If you have a guy 6-0 and you put him in with Tavoris Cloud, that's just not smart business. But they gave it the go-ahead. They were eager, and you saw how it turned out. So this isn't your average bear here. This is a different guy.
Yeah. DeBron, 9-0 and already in a 12-rounder. Your thoughts?
I was impressed when I saw him. My first time seeing him, I heard about him, but the first time I seen him was in the Cloud fight, and I was blown away. And I'm glad that they kept him pretty busy ever since then, because that was, what, the end of 14? And he's, what, this will be his 4th fight since then? So, you know, I think he has a bright future. I understand his confidence, but, you know, I just don't want it to get rushed and then him to run into somebody that would lose his confidence. Like, he run into a fighter that might destroy him or something of that sort. Because I see he's saying he want to jump up and fight Kovalev. That would be great, but, you know.
They're just so eager with him. And, like, you know, I don't really put much stock in the amateurs to a certain degree, but he beat Kovalev twice in amateurs, and he said, you know, we talked about it. He said he knows him very well. He said he doesn't. He said it's funny because I'm like, are you sure? Because he's telling me, he goes, you know, Kovalev doesn't hit that hard. He goes, I didn't think he hit that hard at all. And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. He's looking like he hits pretty hard to me. And he said, well, you know, being in there with him, I didn't feel it. That's okay, you know, I'll say this much. It's entertaining and it's good. Like, it's good for boxing to have guys like this. You know, it reminds me of, not style wise, but mentality. It reminds me of like Clubber Lang in the Rocky movie, where, you know, Clubber's just fighting anybody. Like, he's not worried. He's just gonna plow through these guys, and that's what he believes. And you don't see a lot of young guys just say, oh, I'll fight anybody, no problem, don't even hesitate. Like, we're looking for them, and that's Arthur. That's his mentality right there, 100%.
Now, Scully, what you saying? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Jabron.
Now, to bring it back to what we was talking about, the sparring and things
right.
of that sort. Now, in the amateurs, when they fought with headgear, correct? When Kovalev and him fought.
I'm not sure. Sometimes they in some of the tournaments they were doing it without. But if I was to guess, I would say yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they had the smaller gloves and the headgear. But yeah, like I say, I don't put a 100% stock in it. But you know, I fought guys like when I fought Lamar Park, for example, in the amateurs, I knew from the amateur fights what kind of puncher he was, and as a pro. You know, he showed and proved me right. Like, he was a devastating puncher. But I'm sure most guys who fought Kovalev felt like, if you asked them, they would say, oh yeah, he hits really hard. You know, but Arthur, it's just funny because he has the accent. You know, he doesn't speak 100% English, and he's just like confused to me. You know, it's like it's funny watching his facial expression because he's like. You know, he's like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think he hit that hard. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like, people want him to say, oh yeah, he's devastating. He hits really hard. And Arthur's just, he's just kind of perplexed by it all. It's kind of entertaining to hear him talk about boxing. But either way, like I say, I mean, he's just to me, he's a breath of fresh air. Just his mentality. He has that. Whether he'll pan out, I mean, who knows? You know, who knows? He could go and. You know, get out boxed his next fight. But I just think his mentality, if all fighters had his mentality, boxing would be the greatest game on earth. And everybody would love it.
Yeah. General, I want to talk about a couple fights before we get off the air here. Carson, California, same day you're fighting John, it's on HBO. But I think this is going to be a great fight here. Francisco Vargas against Orlando Salido for Vargas' junior lightweight title. John, your thoughts on that fight?
To be honest with you, you know, I haven't seen a lot of Vargas, but anytime you're in with a guy like Salido, you know, you're going to have to fight. Like, you're going to have to pull out all the stops and really be on top of your game. You know, I don't think Salido is like, a special in the regards of, you know, he's not a Floyd Mayweather defense. He's not a Roy Jones flashy offense. He's not a vicious Julian Jackson puncher, but he's a real tough fight. And he's a real rugged guy, and he has a lot of experience. You know, so I think both guys are in a very tough fight. And, you know, at this point, I mean, I wouldn't even pick a winner. I wouldn't even be able to.
Oh, Jabron, your thoughts on this fight? I'm not asking you I'm not going to ask you to pick a winner. Your thoughts on the matchup, and what do you think about this HBO matchup?
First of all, the card is a great card if you want action-packed fights. The Salido fight is an intriguing fight. Like Scully said, Salido, for my opinion, he's not special, but he has that desire to win and that mentality to never give up. Like, sort of like Marquez. Marquez is, you know, no matter how bad he's losing the fight, he's still going to give you that 110%. So I just can't wait for Saturday. And it seems like StubHub always ends up with these action-packed fights.
Yeah, I can definitely tell. StubHub is, you know, one of those places it just seems like fighters, when they get there, there's a special electricity about it. And, you know, they do manage to accommodate the media very well and make sure that you have access to a lot of material while you're there, whether you're down on the floor or whether you're in some of the booths around there. StubHub is a very good, I guess by it being really a tennis venue, you can't really say that there's a bad seat in the house. But while you're talking about that card, we're also seeing Gabriel Rosado. He's coming back. Now, Gabe, to me, shows a lot of heart. We all know, you know, action-packed from the time the bell rings and until either he stopped or the fight stops. But I've been kind of... I've been kind of wondering where to put Gabe. Gabe, you know, I don't know whether to call him a gatekeeper. I don't know whether to call him a contender. I'm just not sure where Gabe belongs. I think Gabe performs much better and has much more success as a BBK fighter. But... Jabron, your thoughts on Gabriel Rosado?
I think he's better at 154 than 160. I just think those guys just hit too hard for him. His career would last longer at 154. A ton of heart, but now he's been in a lot of like wars. How much longer will he be able to sustain that? Because, you know, every war takes something out of a fighter. How about you, Scully?
I mean, you know, I think he's, it's, you know, it's unfortunate that people put so much emphasis on undefeated records and you know, that type of thing. Matt and I idol looks and all of that. And I think I give it a comparison. You know, when Gaddy and Ward, when they finally, the third fight, when they made $1 million each, I guess they made, you know, that made a lot of sense to me because neither one of them obviously were undefeated. They had several losses between them and, you know, they were proven, you know, they couldn't beat the Mayweathers and the De La Hoyas and that level. But they were, at the bottom line was they were entertaining and they were going to give you the fight you were looking for. And they gave us the fight that De La Hoya Trinidad was supposed to be. Then he gave us the fight that a lot of big fights were supposed to be. And I think Gabe, he could be in with any one of these guys. And you know, he may not beat the elite guys, but he's going to give you the fight. He's going to make these guys work for it. And, you know, at the end of it, I think that's all fans really, really want, is to see a guy try as hard as he can and make it an exciting fight. And, you know, he's perfect for that. But there's going to come a time very soon when his record isn't going to look good enough. You know, it's going to be too many losses or what have you, too many in a row, and they're not going to want to use him anymore, despite the fact that he gives great fights. So he's, you know, I wish he could get a couple wins in the middle here just to keep himself going and make the kind of money he deserves because, you know, he is entertaining and he is going to push these guys 100%. You know, you're going to have to be on top of your game to beat him.
Scully, in some ways, I kind of have to disagree with you here, because I think Gabe financially has been pretty well paid between boxing and the BBK. What I don't think has been advantageous is all of the wars that he's been through. And that's more my concern, is the safety issue when you consider how much punishment he's taken in all of these fights. Scully, does you know, the safety factor ever enter your mind as far as Gabe Rosado's concerned, especially with the cuts and the scar tissue and, you know, like you say, the wars that he's been in?
Right. I mean, you know, unfortunately for me, like, I very rarely think about those type of things. You know, as a fighter, you know, I just feel like, you know, you fight, and that's what you do, and you're expected to take abuse and go through the wars, and some guys, that's just the way they have to fight. Like, they couldn't be successful, they couldn't have gotten to where they are without fighting like that. You know, and that's just him. And you know, back in the day, I mean, I think guys today are just as strong and tough as they've ever been. And, you know, you get like guys like LaMotta and Zale and Fulmer. I mean, those guys have been through a lot more wars and for a lot longer periods of time than these guys are today. And with 6-ounce gloves back then, as opposed to the 10s that they wear now with the foam padding. Back then they wore 6-ounce horse hair. So I think, you know, I mean, as long as he's in good shape and keeps himself fit, I don't really see him getting abused any more than, you know, 100 other guys have been. And, you know, that's the game we all chose. That's actually the name of the game, really. And he's doing it. If he tried to fight a different style or anything, he wouldn't be who he is today.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. Final thoughts, Scully. Ricky Burns becomes Scotland's first 3-time world champion. He just won the WBA super lightweight title. One of the names that he thinks that he wants to fight, he says he'd welcome a Crawford rematch. John, your thoughts on Ricky Burns making history, the Crawford rematch, and any final thoughts you have for us this evening on that?
Well, you know, again, I don't get as excited as a lot of people do about the 3-time champions and the 4-time champions, just because, as I've, you know, I even recently researched it specifically, and I've said many times that there's been more 3-time world champions in the last 20 years than there were in the previous 100. So it's, you know, to me, I don't get as excited maybe when a guy wins his 3rd world title. I have an asterisk next to it. But he, you know, he's an interesting fighter. He makes for good fights. And to me, kind of what I alluded to before, I don't really concern myself with the championships and the double champions and everything. I just look at who would make for good fights. And I don't, and even if they lose, if they make a good fight, I think they deserve to come back and fight again, because entertainment is the bottom line for the viewing audience. And he's right in there. And I think he's in a good weight class with the Crawfords and these different guys. So I'm glad that he did what he did in the respect that country's going to get behind him even more than ever. And you know, maybe they'll put up money and they could bring big fights to his hometown and bring some of those guys over there. Anytime they do that in different countries and widen the boxing viewing there, it's a good thing for boxing worldwide.
Yeah, I definitely stuck. Hey, man, thanks for spending the evening with us. I know, you know, you've been busy and you got a lot of things to do, but, hey, man, much success with Mr. Benavidev, and we look forward, you know, to talking to you
if not next week, soon after, as soon as you get back. And hopefully you'll be successful in the ring. So thank you so much, Scully. We appreciate everything
all right,
you
was
do
good
for
talking
you.
To you. Good, thank you. It was a good talk tonight. I appreciate both you guys, and I'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right. Thanks, Scully.
Thank you. See you guys. All right.
Jabron, your thoughts on Ricky Burns, a possible rematch with Terrence Crawford? You know, maybe they might offer Terrence Crawford a bunch of Euros to go over there to Glasgow. What do you think about that, Jabron?
I think Ricky Burns earned the right to, get a rematch because Crawford did go to Scotland and if I believe, took the belt from him, beat him over there. And, time has passed and he's came back around and did his work and worked back up the rankings. And I feel like he should get the opportunity. And it wasn't like it was a wipeout. It was a competitive fight. I remember the fight clearly. It was a competitive fight through, I say, the first 7 rounds. Once Crawford finally figured the guy out, he just kept him at bay with his jab and used his footwork and ring generalship and finished off the fight. So I think it could be a great fight, but Crawford has to stay focused on his fight in 2 months with Postal. So that's my wrap on that. And did you hear anything about the Nathan Cleverley possibly for July or for Andre Ward?
No, I haven't heard about that. There's all types of speculation about, who Ward wants as his tune-up for, Kovalev. As far as any specifics, no, the only thing that I've heard, and there's a few articles out about, Andre, back sparring and, how he's the pound for pound and, things like that. But there's nothing that's really naming an opponent. Jabron, your final thoughts for the evening, my man. Hold on here. I did see something I wanted to ask you about. Can't think
Why
of
you
it
looking?
Right now, but in the meantime, I was looking through the fight schedule here, and I can't find it right now. Your final thoughts for the evening, my man? Anything you might have heard or anything? The Mickey Bay Rancis Bartholomew fight. Your thoughts on this fight? I know it's for Rancis Bartholomew. And I understand, how everybody, to me, this is what, the third or fourth title that Mickey Bay has been on the B side. Have they, kind of made Mickey Bay, I guess I want to say gatekeeper or, more or less, let's say it like it is. Have they made Mickey Bay cannon fodder?
Yeah, it's sad to say, but that's what it's looking like. In the beginning, there was a lot of hype. And slowly but surely it died down, and it seems like they keep trying to reignite this fire that's kind of not there, really. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, Mickey Bay is another Cleveland guy, it just goes to show, how dirty the game has become. Not saying that we haven't seen it before, but now it just seems like, we need somebody for the champ to be, oh, there's Mickey Bay. hey, he's good for 8 rounds. You know what I mean?
You know,
should he be in the Cleveland 30 for 30 documentary too, part of Cleveland?
Hey, they
get so close.
most certainly. I mean, you know, hey, you know, except for the fact that, I mean, you know, he is still viable, but, you know, and not only that, you know, they also, you know, I know it really sounds bad, but they also get him on the cheap. So, you know what I mean? It's like compounding a bad situation. But at least, you know, hey, you're from Cleveland. I guess it's like being from Detroit. You know, hey, you're getting a payday. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So, hey, for the next 6 months, at least you'll be the big dog on the pond. You know what I mean? So, you know, but
should he be moving to Baltimore with Art Modell?
Well, you know, hey. and perhaps in the middle of the night also. but enough jokes, and, you know, at the expense of fighters, man. You know, hey, it's been good talking to you and Scully tonight, my man. You know, as always, tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and, you know, any other social media that you might be on, and anything you have coming up, any articles, give us your final thoughts for the evening, my man, as we kind of settle off into the sunset here.
Well, I'd like to thank the listeners and everyone for supporting, and I want to thank you, JK, for giving me the opportunity to be on the calls with you and to speak to different guests and try to educate people and bring more people into the sport. And on that note, I'm on Facebook, Jabron Clemon. You can let them know where they can find you at, JK.
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter on either James E. King III, also known as a West Coast Steeler fan, or you can always check out our page, King's Crib. And we also have a presence on Facebook. KingsCrib.com is KingsCrib on Facebook is just all about my Steelers. So, you know, you might not want to go there, but we do have both of our shows represented, the Pugilist Corner and the Weekend Wrap. They are both on Facebook under the Pugilist Corner banner. And we also have the Sports Crib on Thursday night. That is run by Mr. Kalani Lua. Special shout out to him and his family, just having a newborn. I believe it was Friday night. So special shout out to him. And hey, Jabron, thanks as always, my man. Looking forward to seeing you Tuesday. And you can catch us, everyone, Tuesday nights on the Pugilist Corner. So have a great night, everyone. See you next week.